Hello, and welcome to this bonus episode of Pulp Kitchen. If you're joining us, you've probably listened to episode 121, which came out this week. We did a horror double bill where James reviewed
Immaculate and Late Night with the Devil.
And this day, today, no, right, this day,
this
four,
day.
And on this day, and on this bonus episode, we'll be doing an 80s reboot double bill. Mm. Yes, the thing you've always asked for.
Yeah.
It's a review of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire and the reboot of Roadhouse.
Like a remake versus more than reboot, I'd say.
Ghostbusters is more of a remake.
No, sorry, Roadhouse
yes,
is more
sorry.
Of a remake.
I'm sorry, you're right, it is more of a remake. But broadly speaking, a derivative idea.
Yeah.
Let's begin with...
Scrape the IP barrel. What do we got?
So, that Patrick Swayze film?
He's about to... Anyway.
Let's go back. Let's start with Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. So James and I were able to go see this at a fun little screening event in Leicester Square.
Huge screening
last
event.
Last week they had the Ghostbusters car out front, people in proton packs. We had a couple of mates come along and, you know, it was quite a lot of activity. And we're going in fairly ambivalent, to be honest, because I've never been a huge fan of the original Ghostbusters. Mm. I think it's like fine. I think it's been overrated for me. Ghostbusters 2, I've never seen. Ghostbusters 2016, like, tried, didn't work. I didn't see 2021's Ghostbusters Afterlife, and I think I was quite mean about it on this show. I was like, who's wanting a Ghostbusters movie in this time?
I feel similar. I've seen Ghostbusters 1, I've seen 2016, not seen after. I've seen half of the films, right? Well, now I've seen more than half. But I feel like it's multiple things. I think we didn't grow up with it.
Yeah.
And I think there's a real moment in time that's captured in that original Ghostbusters concept that I don't think necessarily catches younger generations of people. So like my dad has a real fondness for Ghostbusters. He's like, oh yeah, Ghostbusters, great film. But he's not watching it regularly.
Yeah.
But I've since seen it and I'm like, yeah, like it's fun. Like, oh, Bill Murray, like it's sort of him doing his comedic thing. It's funny. But I was never hugely taken by it. I think also if you rewatch it, there's a lot of things in there that are quite out there and
some sort of sexual jokes.
Jokes are really quite bizarre from the 80s. But needless to say, I know of people on the internet who are like Ghostbusters is their thing and they just love it and they wear the proton packs. I'm like, what are you clinging to that this is your franchise?
Yeah,
I've always wondered, like, you've got one good film.
Yes. It reminds me...
I know you can say that, like, there are actually very few good Star Wars films, and, like, as we go on, the number of good Star Wars films is lower and lower, but I'm always like, there's still quite a lot to grab onto there, whereas with Ghostbusters, I'm like, sure, if you like it, more power to you.
It kind of reminds me a bit of Men in Black, which is, like, great, one solid film, and then they've tried to spin several films
and
off
of
afterwards.
And you go from, like, 2015, 16 Ghostbusters to this, what it originally was feels so diluted and changed by studios. I've never really... It doesn't drop into my head at all.
I know, exactly. It's not in the current cultural landscape. It's not something that people walk around with.
Much as they're trying to make it.
Exactly. And I've heard that the 2021 Ghostbusters Afterlife was just one wall-to-wall nostalgia fest. Just like, oh, do you remember this? Do you remember that?
It had the same trailer structure as a lot of the modern remakes have, with a reduced piano theme of the song you love and now remember, slowly building, like, is it true what they did before? Yeah, it happened. Yeah. Harrison Ford in the Millennium Falcon scene.
True.
But just insert that into everything. Someone blows the dust off of an old relic the past.
Yeah.
You see an old photo of those actors that you love.
Yeah, and here they are with their faces stapled back. So we went to see this, but the reason we accepted it is because, you know, I don't know about you, James, but I was curious to see how they are re-injecting an old IP into the current landscape. I thought, okay, I'll give this a chance. Why not? It's nice to be invited. And like I said, it was
like
a big event.
Rudd.
Yeah, I really love Paul Rudd. Yeah. You know, and all the talent involved, you know, Carrie Coon I really like, and Camille Nanjiani's in it, and, you know, Finn Wolfhard. And then
James
you've got
a.
the old
Caster.
James Acaster's in it as well.
I need silence.
I saw the ghosts. And I put them away.
I shot the movie, and now it's done.
Saw the ghosts, had a panic attack, bon appetit.
He actually doesn't do that.
He doesn't. But he should have done.
He should have done.
Ghostbusters.
That's what I think.
Scary creatures. Anyway. That was James Acaster.
If you're not British, you probably don't know James Acaster. If you are,
so we go into. I thought it was funny as well. So me, James, and a mate of mine, we go in. First of all, they're trying to create a bit of atmosphere, which is fine.
But I turned up like 1.5 beers in.
Yeah, and the bouncer on the door was like, checking our bags, and then she was like, "And who you going to call?" And three of us just went, "Ghost." We went, "Ghostbusters." Yeah, it was kind of this sort of lackluster. Oh yeah. I really wanted to be like my mum to pick me up.
I was like, "What?"
So we go in, and as explained in the main episode this week, we had lots of Monster Munch.
Huge.
We settle into the big recliner chairs, and
everyone had a huge bag. I ate two of them.
Yeah,
terrible.
Anyway, so Ghostbusters: Frozen Empire. How to describe it? So after the events of Afterlife, which you don't really need to have seen because they do explain it. But basically, Paul Rudd's not their dad, but he's like he's dating the mum, and the mum has two kids, Finn Wolfhard and McKenna Grace. And McKenna Grace is really like nerdy and. They're into ghosts. Anyway,
Spengler's
they
kid.
Are Spengler's kids. Spengler, who was played in the original film by Harold Ramis,
who sadly
passed away about 10 years ago. And they, in Afterlife, basically took up the mantle. And now they're back in New York because Winston Zeddemeyer, played by Ernie Hudson, who's now a multimillionaire philanthropist, gave them the old firehouse and said, you can take up the Ghostbusters. So the Ghostbusters are back in New York, where they belong. And they're running around catching ghosts.
Not really. An opening scene. That's one of my problems with the film. There's an opening scene.
Not a lot of ghostbusting.
They catch ghosts and the rest of it seems to do no ghostbusting.
Yeah.
So the thing is like you're finally bringing it back to New York.
Yeah. Anyway, so there they are. And, the nerdy kid likes to be nerdy, wants to catch ghosts, but she's too young. And Finn Wolfhard is in the movie. And Carrie Coon just wants them to be a happy family. And Paul Rudd just wants to be their dad. And then, Bill Murray's around. And Dan Aykroyd runs a spooky old shop with this other kid who I guess was in the other movie, but doesn't really need to be in this one. Yeah. Annie Potts from the first Ghostbusters also knocks around. I mean, there's a lot of people just walking across screen.
People just
like a
lava
lamp of people. And weird description. Anyway,
I feel like a corporate guy from head office walking into a company that needs to have like
downsizing.
Huge redundancies.
Yeah.
What are all these people doing? How much are they getting paid?
No. You feel like in Succession when Kendall comes in, it's just like we're shutting Voldor down.
You're not getting fucking paid. You're all done.
And then they find a spooky ball, which makes things very cold. And in it is a very spooky demon ghost who makes things very, very cold. And here's what I thought was going to happen in the movie, which I'm not saying I can make a movie, but I would have thought would have been a bit more interesting considering the film is called Frozen Empire. Okay. Yeah. And the marketing is New York, all frozen.
The ice coming out of the beach sand.
Exactly. I thought the movie was going to be first act introducing to the characters. And then suddenly the inciting incident is ice everywhere. We're in the Frozen Empire. New York is under siege as cold. And in this cold environment, the Ghostbusters have to find out what to do and how to do this ghost. Mm. No. If you're looking forward to the Frozen Empire, you've got to wait for the last 20 minutes because the rest of the film is them plodding around, trying to find out who this cold ghost is.
And you never really see an empire that's frozen. It's more like Frozen Fire Station.
Yeah, Frozen Fire Station. You don't even see like Frozen Central Park. We just sort of see frozen and the couple of streets. It's Frozen Hell's Kitchen. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Frozen meatpacking area.
Yeah, district.
Yeah. Their district is an area.
That's what they'd call it.
Anyway, the meat.
You go to New York, like, hi, where's the meatpacking area?
It's downstairs. Oh, you mean the district?
The district. Well, you gotta go down.
That's what happens.
Sorry.
Lots of things go on. There are cameos, there are callbacks, there are lots of people. Yeah. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. James, give us your 2 cents.
Well, like you said, so quite happy to go in for... someone said to me the other day, I described something as a very much a studio movie. And my friend asked me, what do you mean by studio movie? And I said Ghostbusters 2016 is my example of like a prime studio movie.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, like this really does feel very studio. And I thought, you know what? They could still be fun. Ghostbusters could always be fun to me. I don't hold a negative grudge in my head for Ghostbusters. Yeah. I'm just yet to be like profoundly impressed by Ghostbusters. It was considerably worse than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
It really was. I found myself trying to not nod off multiple times. Once I finished my Monster Munch after like 35 minutes because I had so much, I just was struggling to find anything to make me interested in this film. There are far too many characters that, as we already said, just did not contribute. They did not earn their right to exist in this film. A lot of the actors feel like they're phoning it in. I will say, I think McKenna Grace as Phoebe Spengler is good with what she gets to do. Finn Wolfhard, as you said, doesn't really get much to do in this film and just ends up being a bit of an awkward charisma vacuum, which I think is a shame because I do think he's better than what he's given to do in this film. God bless Dan Aykroyd for giving every line 100%. What? That means we could be tumbling into an ice age.
Dan Aykroyd does love the spookiness.
Totally
loves it. Because it was him and Harold Ramis, I think, who came up with the original idea. So good for him.
It really does feel like he's, you know, making... I hope he's making a good amount of money and he's just, oh, that's the line? Sure, let's just give it everything. Spooky. But even that can't save it. Kumail Nanjiani does the best with what he can. He's a little bit funny. James Acaster, a refreshing bit of British wit in an otherwise very American film. But other than that, really void of personality. Unfortunately, I don't think the fans of Ghostbusters IP win with this film. I don't think non-fans of Ghostbusters have anything interesting to look at. The only ones who are winning are the handful of actors who got paid millions of pounds to turn up for, 10 days?
Yeah.
And do some filming, because that's what it feels like. It really feels like they turned up and just did their bit. Bill Murray, I think, is great, right? Not in this film, but I think Bill Murray on the whole is great. He's a great comedic actor. Yeah. You could point at a load of great films that Bill Murray's been in. We're like, oh yeah, I love Bill Murray. Can we stop just, I know this is Ghostbusters, but just across Hollywood, just putting Bill Murray in a film not having him doing anything. I'm not so in love with Bill Murray that if I still see Bill Murray, I'm like, oh my God, they got Bill Murray. That's Bill Murray. That doesn't impress me.
Yeah.
Because you saw it in Marvel. You've seen it in a bunch of other things. I don't just see Bill Murray and think, this is the best film ever.
Yeah.
How did they get Bill Murray? He's so funny. That doesn't impress me. When you bring an old actor from... You're trying to rejuvenate an IP and you want to bring an old cast member back in, they need to do something. They need to contribute.
Yes, yeah.
For example, Harrison Ford as Han Solo in The Force Awakens has a plot. He has an arc. He has dialogue. Yeah. Things that he does with other people matter. What he does and doesn't say or do contributes to the narrative. Right. I'm not saying The Force Awakens is a perfect film, but that's how you bring back a character to help rejuvenate an IP. I don't just see Bill Murray in this and go, oh man, what a film.
They
got Bill Murray back to do two lines. So I'm a little bit bored of, I'm not trying to throw Bill Murray under the bus, but he has been a victim to just like bringing him into something.
He's like been memeified.
It doesn't impress me.
I would just say on that, I agree. I think the only person who earns his right as a Ghostbuster is Dan Aykroyd. You could almost, if you lost the other four, because they've played up Annie Potts' character because obviously Harold Ramis is no longer around. I'm like, if you stripped all of them out, you just had... He's the only one that's material to the plot because he has the shop. You could say Ernie Hudson has the laboratory, but really, it's just Dan Aykroyd you need.
And there's a moment sort of towards the end when, you know, everything needs to be fought and you've got, they sort of show the firehouse and you've got all of these, all of these characters intricately blocked. And I'm like, there's just way too many of you.
I think it's like 11 people in one room.
It's way too many. What have you all done? Finn Wolfhard as well. Like, he has a scene where he goes to an attic and fights the green slimy thing. Other than that, he does nothing.
He really is in it. He's absent.
He's very absent.
It also reminded me that at the beginning of the screening, Alex Zane introduced it and he said, and please guys, could you refrain from posting any spoilers when you review the film? Because there are lots of spoilers in this movie. Spoil what?
There's nothing to spoil.
Nothing to spoil. So I was expecting, there is a couple of the old Ghostbusters going to get killed.
Yeah.
Like something like that, like a Harrison Ford thing, chest burster.
Exactly, like consequences.
Whoa, No, nothing. I couldn't spoil this movie for you if I tried.
Cold and horny, 12 o'clock. Bill Murray says that because the villain has horns and it's cold. Yeah. It's like, okay,
there's
fine.
One line that I went, and it's where they need a match, they need a light. And Dan Aykroyd says, I gave up smoking in the 90s. And Bill Murray says, I'm proud of you then, proud of you now. And that's the same sound you heard in the auditorium.
Probably 5 million.
five million per word.
Bill, congrats to Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd for just cashing in on this. Paul Rudd, super ineffectual and just as I said in the other episode, like just becoming a bit of a sort of comedy dad schmuck.
Despite being a very charismatic screen presence in other things.
In other things. And a guy who's in Endgame,
a great warm presence, you know, seeing him in interviews and everything. Yeah. I like Paul Rudd I like to see Paul Rudd.
How good is that scene in Endgame when he goes to see his kid who's like, he's not seen for 5 years. He's like, you're so big. Mm. And then he comes and explains the concept of time. Yeah, he's great in that.
This, no.
That awful CG. Yep. Immediately dated, immediately bad. I don't want to rip on this film for too long, I think. But like the whole thing about plot is that you there's nothing in the trailer that isn't in the film. It's just an expanded version of that trailer.
I think what's quite... Because the thing is, I wasn't watching it being like, oh my God, this is terrible. I just felt nothing, right? And I sit there and I'm thinking, what was your point of this film? What were you trying to say? And it very much feels like they had an Excel spreadsheet and they had a slot that said, untitled Ghostbusters reboot sequel.
Yeah.
And we'll just commission it and we'll work out everything later. Because there's nothing about it that feels to have any sort of dramatic point. No. It's just sort of... It ends basically... The characters don't go... There's no resolution. The characters end the film exactly where they started, basically.
Exactly where they started.
There's a sort of vague emotional arc. But like, there's really... I was like, what are you trying to say? I feel like you're treading water to try and make enough money so you can justify coming back for a third untitled Ghostbusters reboot sequel in 2026.
Assuming it makes money, it's just ready
Well,
to
it's
go.
Doing okay at the moment. I just checked this morning.
So we a friend of the show and a guest reviewer, Henry Calvert, we caught up with him afterwards. And I remember catching his eyes. He just went, oh my God. And he was like, really? A sky beam in 2024? Like, because there's a sky beam at one point that doesn't matter to any. It's not like a sky beam crucial to the plot. Like
no, but
Man
when
of
it
Steel.
Happened, I was like, really? 2024, yeah. Really? Yeah. That was 2012 that the whole thing came around. It's meaningless, pointless, and not very fun.
I guess the message is, if you're thinking of like, oh yeah, what's like a fun family film film for the whole family? Oh yeah, I remember Ghostbusters. I promise you there's very little, if anything, to be gained from going to see it.
Empty calorie movie.
Empty
like
calorie
Monster
movie.
Munch.
Unfortunately, the Monster Munch rate were not empty calories.
Also, that was probably the highlight for you, wasn't it?
Just getting some free snacks, yeah. Free beer.
Other thing, sorry. I actually think I've personally for me, well, the best thing about the original Ghostbusters is the song, okay? Yeah. Which is a bop, it is a banger, it's a massive hit, it's iconic, okay?
You just age yourself by like 20 years calling a song a bop. But
no, people call that song a bop. That's internet parlance at the moment.
Bop. But like that's been reclaimed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can still say it's a bop. I'm not from the original, I'm not from the 50s where they said like, this song is a real bop. It's a real jitterbug.
Yeah, it's a Gen X wouldn't say it. Yeah, okay.
I'll give
you a reference.
I also called it three different things. Choose your one.
Hey, that's a bop.
Yeah, it's a bop. It's a hit, it's a tune. It's a classic, it's iconic, okay? Let me get back to my point. And I'm thinking, so you know, you've got to use that song. I was like, they're going to use it in the film. And I look forward to obviously you can't overuse it. They're going to save it and use it for some point. And true enough, they don't use the song for ages and ages and ages. And I'm like, that's fine. And I'm thinking, I'm like, can I say it? Let me get to the point. I'm thinking, okay, you're going to get to a point and you're going to have the, which is great. We're all there. We're all ready for the Ghostbusters theme tune. And what they actually do is just sort of put it on half volume during a massive crowd scene. And before you know it, you just sort of hear, and I'm like, what? Yeah. You could have kicked them. You don't even know how to use your own material.
The film almost fades itself out.
like a vapor. Moment,
just like a ghost song. Vapor. You know when songs just repeat the chorus until it fades?
Yeah.
Ennie, are you okay? So Ennie just keeps going. And Paul Rudd's like, hey, let's go get our proton packs.
Mwah, mwah, mwah. Anyway, enough. That's Ghostbusters Frozen Empire for you. Let's go on to the remake of the Patrick Swayze 1980-something film.
It was 89.
Film Roadhouse. A film I've never seen. Yeah. A film I've seen pretty poor reviews of the original.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the original?
No, I've not seen the original.
No.
First thing to say, Jake Gyllenhaal, shredded.
Yes.
Shredded. I don't think he looked at a carbohydrate for 6 months before that film. I reckon if anyone said the words mashed potato, he was like, la, 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 I can't hear it. Saw a whole Men's Health cover.
Yeah, he looks like vacuum packed.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Dehydrated.
Yeah.
For sure. He looks great.
He goes out in the rain. He just inflates.
Totally. A bit of moisture in it.
Yeah.
No, he looks great. Congrats. That's the most sort of impressive part about this film is Jake Gyllenhaal's svelte physique. So I first became aware of this film. They were at MMA events. They were shooting. They had a huge crowd there. There's MMA events. And tacked on to the end of an MMA show, They got Jake Gyllenhaal to come out.
Mixed martial arts.
Mixed martial arts, UFC, MMA. To come out and film a scene with cinema cameras, but with the lighting and the crowd already there. I think Dana White, who runs the MMA, like gave this big speech, like, hey, like they're filming this movie, blah, blah, blah. I want you all to like give the crowd a huge thing, react. It was obviously a fake choreographed fight, but they wanted the crowd to react. I was like, oh, that's quite cool. They're filming at MMA. Jake Gyllenhaal there, big, big character moments. And I thought, oh, that's fun. I also heard that like Conor McGregor had been cast in it. Nice fight movie. Jake Gyllenhaal's good in Southpaw, blah, blah, blah. I'll get back to Conor McGregor being cast in this film. Then there were reports that came out sort of the week this film came out that Doug Liman, who directs this film.
A good director.
A good director, bit very high profile director has worked.
Edge of Tomorrow, Born Identity, Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
100%.
Lots of stuff.
Who wasn't happy. So apparently, originally, this film is with Amazon, was meant to get a full theatrical release and was going to be released in cinemas. But in the lead up to this film coming out, a decision was made to not release it in cinemas and put it straight onto streaming.
I might just add to that. So I believe what happened is Doug Liman, they agreed a deal with MGM Studios. MGM Studios, for what Doug Liman claims was a theatrical release for this movie, right? Amazon then bought MGM Studios and were like, you can make it for like 80 million, but it goes straight on streaming. Or you make it for 50 million and it goes on a theatrical release, right? And Doug Liman claims, he said, we're always going for the theatrical release first, okay? So in the week leading up to the film, as you say, it's going straight to streaming. Doug Liman doesn't support the movie, doesn't attend the premiere and says...
Publicly denounces Amazon, the movie. Which again, like high-profile filmmaker basically saying...
Basically saying, you don't support cinema, you're not supporting this. Jake Gyllenhaal sort of come in and said, no, it was always going to go on streaming. Like, it's very cloudy, but it's interesting, the politics of it.
I then see a Casey Neistat uploads this great video with Doug Liman about filmmaking, about the process of working on something for 3+ years. Yeah. And Casey Neistat doing that, you know, just YouTube videos, which obviously have a really fast turnaround. The whole nature of it, Doug Liman shows him into the place where he cuts the movie. He's like, I shot this film on IMAX cameras. It was designed for the big screen. Look at this room, which is sound mixed for cinema, to grade it for a cinema. Amazon have just basically decided to put my thing out on streams to help them sell toothbrushes and toilet roll. Like, huge sort of F you to Amazon. And I thought, okay, literally he saw the bridge, covered it in oil, lit a cigarette and just flicked it on there. It's like, fuck that bridge, I'm done. So I thought, I have a film podcast, I'll check this film out. As you said, it's a modern reboot of Roadhouse from 1989, which starred Patrick Swayze. They are sort of...
R.A.P., long lost Patrick Swayze.
And sort of it's the spirit of the plot is essentially the same, but with a lot of modern differences. So it's set in modern day, but like the essential premise is the same, but very different. Jake Gyllenhaal stars as former MMA fighter Elwood Dalton, who's in... So I think Dalton, he shares the last name with Patrick Swayze's character, but...
Right.
Yeah, who in opening this film with Post Malone cameo.
Oh.
Who also does a song. He makes a living scamming fighters on the underground fighting circuit. And as that sort of runs dry, he is approached by Frankie, who owns an unruly roadhouse in sunny Florida Keys.
What is a roadhouse, James?
A roadhouse, from what I can tell, it's like a roadside bar with like multiple floors and there's live music and you can probably stay there, like a public house.
Okay.
Like a big rowdy bar.
But with like motorbikes and Hell's Angels there.
Yeah,
I see.
Yeah. Okay. A little bit sort of crime stricken.
Okay.
Troublemaker. You don't want to...
Got it.
You don't want to stumble. You don't want to spill the beer of the wrong guy on a roadhouse. But it's beautiful, tropical, Florida Keys, sunny. And so he's approached by Frank, who owns this roadhouse, and he's offered a job as a sort of unofficial bouncer, like an informal bouncer, to basically take care of the troublemakers at the roadhouse and sort of keep the peace. Like, he's not an official bouncer, but he's sort of hanging around and his stuff kicks off, which it inevitably does. He's had to sort it out. Meanwhile, the psychotic son of a gangster played by Billy Magnuson has been buying up the local land to plan the building of a huge resort. Although the only outlier who's not sold is Frankie, who won't sell the roadhouse. Therefore, he's creating lots of trouble trying to get it burnt down. Threats are exchanged back and forth. Fights, bike riders, builds to a crescendo, etc. Plot. Conor McGregor is in this film way more than I thought. Yes.
I'm not au fait with this world. Okay, Conor McGregor, could you just give me a little praise? I know the name.
Yes.
Could you just explain?
Irish UFC fighter, probably has since sort of definitely passed his era, but definitely is responsible for the rise and proliferation of the UFC. Right. He was at one point the greatest MMA fighter. He was undefeated. He's got the biggest personality. He's this like huge Irish man. He's amazingly entertaining. He crossed over into boxing, fought Floyd Mayweather in the largest pay-per-view fight that ever happened. You know Floyd Mayweather, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The largest pay-per-view fight that ever happened. He unfortunately has been on a bit of a decline. He made like $100 million for his fight. And I think post that, he's never really been able to recapture the same highs. He's definitely not in the best place right now, considering the way some of the interviews for this film have looked. He's not won a fight in a while, but nonetheless, incredibly charismatic, incredibly entertaining. Mm. Is in this film way more than I would have put Conor McGregor in my film. It's like a speaking role with lines. I thought he'd have a cameo,
yeah.
But he plays like...
A character.
It's a character, lines, and he plays like the guy that Jake Gyllenhaal has to fight. It's a speaking part. And do you know what? Of all the things, he comes into the film about halfway through and he really uplifts it. He's actually very good. He's just playing a more exaggerated villainous version of himself. But he's very fun and he's charismatic and he's crazy and he actually like lifts up the whole film in a lot more ways than I thought he would. Jake Gyllenhaal, I really think he's a great actor. But outside of his incredible physique, he just really didn't excite me in this film. A lot of his delivery in this was very subdued, almost stoner-like, just very boring, very sort of... I don't think the writing helps it, but I just think he has a very boring character. Mm. And a lot of his writing is... a lot of his dialogue is like, yeah, well, there's this and there's that. And it's not like the sort of charm and charisma that like Swayze would have had. Mm. Obviously, a different film, but still. There's moments where we flash back to his MMA career, which is that moment which I saw being filmed where it's like bright lights and the cinematography kind of comes alive in that moment. And I kept thinking, that sounds like quite a fun film. Maybe I just would have preferred an MMA film starring Jake Gyllenhaal. You take all like the drama of the press conferences and you do that, but instead we're kind of here. So something was quite off about this film, and occasionally we both see films where we look at the cinematography and we go, oh, it's not quite to my taste, but nonetheless it's still professional cinematography that's like properly done. I watched this film and it's I think for the first time, and I really wouldn't say this without sort of really believing it, because I wouldn't sort of, I don't know, like denounce the work of someone who's worked on a film in that way. But there was many shots in this film that I just thought were shoddy.
Really?
Like actually bad cinematography. Like there's distasteful cinematography where like that didn't work for that scene. But sometimes I'm like, this is just shaky, not in a way that's purposeful, like a Jason Bourne fight. It felt indecisive and unstructured. Like we've got a wide and the camera does a lot of floating and we're hit. Like, are you trying to shoot a mid shot or a close up or a wide at the same time? And it just didn't work.
Like you pass the camera to an intern and it's just like, hold on to that for a second. So
it looks like, because I go through a lot of my own rushes that I shoot for brands and I'm like, James, that shot doesn't work because you're not actually trying to shoot one thing or trying to do two things at once. It really felt like incomplete and just bad. Huh. And so there's moments in the fights where that wide angle pass the camera along really works. It brings fights alive. But it's the same for the dialogue scenes. And I kept on thinking like, this just doesn't look good at all, which is quite strange. So, you know, I look at this film and I just think, yes, this decision has been made to not release it in theatres, but most likely I think there's also been people who've watched a version of this film. Some bean counter has gone, we can release this theatrically, but the film's not very good. It probably won't make its money back. We can just put it on Prime. If it finds an audience, great. Mm. If not, we've not lost any money on the huge theatrical release. So I'd love to be able to say that, yeah, Doug Liman, like you speak your truth. This is actually a really great film. Unfortunately, it's not that great. It's a bit outside of Conor McGregor being Conor McGregor. It's very much void of charisma and fun and just a shoddy camera experience. If someone was to write in and say, actually, no, it's doing this and you've missed the point, I would very much concede that. But I cannot just get this overriding feeling that the way the scenes were put together was off. So like they use a lot of wide angle lenses, and then in the same scene they cut what must be like at 135mm, which I find really like a super zoomed in shot.
Are you just noticing this more? I would find it jarring.
I think you would too. Huh. It's not because I use cameras. I really just felt like the cinematography was strange and indecisive. Right. I can't tell what this shot's meant to be showing. You've got two people talking and I'm like, is this his shot or that shot, or is it wide? The focus is going in between. is strange. Mm. Very much happy for someone to say it's meant to be doing this, but there you go. That's Roadhouse, a weird experience. But as always, we'd love to hear your thoughts if you want to send them in to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com.
If anyone's seen Roadhouse or Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, but if anyone has seen Roadhouse, the new one, and actually the old one, let us know, because I've heard mixed things about that, mixed things about this.
That one looks charming.
Let us know.
It's a very 80s concept. Like, yeah. Hey, you're a fighter? Come and take care of my bar.
Take that outside. Yeah. That's not how Swayze spoke.
They fight for more than just respect. They fight for
love. That was Roadhouse, and that was Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Thank you for joining us for this bonus episode of Pulp Kitchen. As you know, we post regular numbered episodes every single Wednesday. If you haven't listened to this week's episode about Immaculate and Late Night with the Devil, go and do it.
Spooky season. Spooky season.
Otherwise,
March.
We look forward to seeing you next week. Check out all the stuff on socials as well. Mm-hmm. Our interviews with the cast of Three Body Problem, that's on Netflix at the moment. Also, lots of other fun interviews and things that we do on Instagram and TikTok. James, I think I've said everything, but would you like anything to add?
Have a great day, everyone.
Have a great week.
Okay. See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.